Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from the two Catholic nuns who spent time in federal prison for their actions to raise awareness about the threat to humanity posed by nuclear weapons. Sister Ardith Platy and Sister Carol Gilbert are back in Colorado many years after their plowshares action led to a prison sentence. Well, this time they're talking about the connection between nuclear weapons and the climate crisis. After that, we'll hear from a Denver attorney who also works in Mexico, and he's been working with asylum seekers on the US-Mexico border. He's going to speak about the militarization of that border and how the Trump administration is taking advantage of the coronavirus to send even more troops to the US border. After the comment line, it's time for science. And today we'll hear about the book Under the Influence, Putting Peer Pressure to Work. That's with author Robert Frank. At 9 o'clock, a very special, never before heard Alan Watts show coming up for the Spring Fund Drive. Alan Watts put to music. We'll have a CD available as a thank you gift, as well as some new book titles, The Letters of Alan Watts, and several new offerings never before offered on KGNU. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Alejandra Wilcox.
The Boulder Valley School District has cancelled some planned school trips to other states and countries as a precautionary response to the outbreak of the coronavirus. Other schools and universities throughout Colorado are already looking at ways to limit the spread of the virus within the state, with Metro University, Colorado State University, and CU Boulder officials encouraging faculty and instructors to start preparing for online-only instruction. Governor Jared Polis has directed health insurers in Colorado to waive fees for coronavirus testing and treatment. The announcement comes as the state identified new cases that bring the statewide total to 12, with the Department of Public Health reporting that 4 presumptive cases were identified yesterday alone. Michael DeJuana has more.
State health officials don't want people with symptoms of the virus, like coughing or shortness of breath, to avoid their doctor because they're worried about getting hit with a fee. Co-pays, co-insurance, and deductibles can be waived, along with some prescription and telehealth costs. The governor's order applies to state-regulated plans. You're covered if your insurance card has the letters CO-DOI on the corner. Colorado's first coronavirus case was announced last week. I'm Michael DeJuana.
Denver Fire Chief Eric Tade recently resigned following the annual Firefighters Ball, which included coarse and sexually suggestive humor, as well as disparaging jokes made at the expense of a high-ranking Latino firefighter. The Colorado Latino Forum has now invited Mayor Michael Hancock to sit down with them and discuss the long history of discrimination that the group says has permeated the city's Department of Public Safety. A spokesperson for the Latino Forum told the Denver Post that this is the second year in a row the Firefighters Ball has included sexually inappropriate behavior. The spokesperson said that a Latino caricature appeared on the box of a sex toy at the event. Former Latino Forum co-chair Lisa Calderon confirmed that Denver City Councilwoman Candy Sedabaca received a complaint this year that an offensive comment about the sex toy was also made within the presence of a high-ranking Latino firefighter. Sedabaca's office hopes to participate in the meeting with the Latino Forum and Mayor Hancock. A spokesperson for Hancock said the mayor's office is taking the invitation under advisement. Tade, who will step down from fire chief to an assistant chief position later in March, had reportedly promised the mayor after the 2019 Firefighters Ball that no inappropriate behavior would happen again. A Latino Forum spokesperson said that Tade's demotion will not fix the systemic issues embedded within the fire department, especially given that he will remain in a high-ranking position there. The same spokesperson called for a person of color, ideally a Latino or Latina, to be promoted to leadership and disseminate a, quote, whole new work environment and work culture that would be more appropriate and equitable. In weather today, sunny skies continue with temperatures hovering just under 60 degrees throughout the day. It's currently 42 degrees here on the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Alejandra Wilcox.
It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, Sisters Carol Gilbert and Ardith Platty are Catholic nuns who have dedicated their lives to raising awareness about the threat to humanity posed by nuclear weapons. In fact, their work has landed them in federal prison. Well, they're back in Colorado this week, raising awareness about the combined threat of nuclear weapons and the climate crisis.
Well, first of all, in 2000, we tried to unmask the fact that space weapons were being displayed at Peterson Air Force Base. And so we went there and unmasked that through a plowshare action. And then in 2002, we went out to N-8 missile silo. And at that time, we did a plowshare action to unmask the fact that the president was threatening to use nuclear weapons on Iraq. And as you recall, while we were going to trial, actually, the bombing did take place with multi-conventional weapons. And that war is really still going on. I mean, the ongoing destruction of Iraq is just horrendous. So what plowshare actions do is that, is that we just try to teach the truth to the people, because many times the news remains secret regarding what is happening in war and what is happening in other countries by the United States.
When we look at how much money is being spent on the US's nuclear arsenal, and we're talking trillions of dollars, and you look at how many people are living in poverty, how many children are living in poverty, how many people don't have access to healthcare, how many students are in unsurmountable debt trying to get a third level education, and you compare that with the amount of money that the federal government, not just under the Trump administration, but certainly under the Obama administration and pretty much all administrations since we've seen nuclear weapons being present, how much money is being spent in that. If you look at that from not just a moral and spiritual perspective, but even a practical perspective, how do you think we as a society really need to be facing up to that?
Oh, you are absolutely correct. According to the Poor People's Campaign that is in practice right now, there are 140 million people living in poverty, which means that they are like a paycheck away, or they are doing three jobs to make a living, or they are on the streets of the cities. So that's one thing. The second thing is, you're right, trillions of dollars have been spent on nuclear weapons alone. But also, the whole military-industrial complex spends trillions of dollars. For example, this next budget year, if you go into all the departments that are connected with that complex, you will see $1.25 trillion in the very budget for the militarization. And that includes the 800 bases, that includes the defense, the Pentagon budget, that includes the nuclear weapons in the Energy Department, and it includes all of the care that we must take for our very destroyed, you know, our the trauma that comes on the military when they return from war. So you're so correct on this. This, all of this money is needed at this time for all the basic human needs. And, you know, there's a position that World Beyond War takes, and they say 3% of the military budget could solve the hunger, malnutrition of the world. So as you can see, the United States and other militarized nations, too, must get rid of nuclear weapons to begin with, because those can never be used. And of course, Sister Carol and I work very diligently against war. You see, the military-industrial complex is the one that uses more fossil fuel than whole nations use. So it is a matter that we begin to decrease this budget by billions and billions of dollars and begin putting it into one of the whole position budgets, which is called Warheads to Windmills, and the Poor People's Budget, which has been already submitted to the Budget Committee of Congress.
So, Sister Carol, as we've heard, you lead workshops really around the country in talking about solutions and how we can actually counteract this when we look at the dual threats of nuclear weapons and also the climate crisis. What are some of the main points that you make in these workshops?
Well, the first thing is people need to join. They need to join the movement. So they need to sign up with the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, or the Treaty Compliance Campaign, which is the organization here in the United States, or Back from the Brink, the preventnuclearwar.org. Back from the Brink is a combination of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and the Physicians for Social Responsibility, and they kind of have a five-branch approach, ending with the signing of the Treaty for the Prohibition, but first renouncing using nuclear weapons first, not allowing the president to make the decision alone, taking the weapons off of high trigger alert, no enhanced new weapon systems, and then finally the treaty. So those three websites are all excellent ones for people to sign up and join the movement. We also think it's important that people listen to the stories of the survivors of the nuclear weapons and testing. And so we give out a whole list of short vignettes, films that people can see. One that really includes both is called Sacred Lands and Wounded Lives, the Environmental Footprint of War, that they've divided up into about six parts. The International Red Cross, Red Crescent, believes that they had to do something as it related to nuclear weapons. They have a no-to-nukes .org is their website, because they know that from a humanitarian standpoint, both climate and weapons, there's nothing that they could do. They have some wonderful short films people can see. We think it's important that people pressure their elected officials. ICANN has the All Cities Pledge. And I need to say that while we have many cities across the United States, in fact, sometimes we have whole states that have signed on to support the treaty, we have no one, no city in the state of Colorado has yet said yes to the treaty. We're taking it to representatives and senators. We have 11 representatives. We have no senator, U.S. senator has signed on yet. So cities can join, but it doesn't have to even just be a city. Churches, schools, colleges can all sign on. Probably more important than almost any of these is to participate in Don't Bank on the Bomb campaign. And that started in Europe, but that's the whole divestment campaign. And we know that boycotts and divestments have worked. Washington, D.C., has a fossil fuel divestment. We also have a nuclear weapons divestment. New York City is very close to having their divestment campaign. And again, this can be as individuals. This can be where someone calls their bank and asks them if they're investing in nuclear weapons. And while credit unions are wonderful places to invest money, there's really only one bank in the United States that has a public statement that they will not invest, and that is Amalgamated Bank, and you do have a branch in Boulder, Colorado. So people should think, if they're invested in a bank, of putting their money with Amalgamated Bank.
That's Sister Carol Gilbert. We also heard from Sister Ardith Platty. They are Plowshares activists, the Catholic nuns who've dedicated their lives to raising awareness about the threat of nuclear weapons. They're now talking about the dual threat of the climate crisis and nuclear weapons. And they're back in Colorado. They'll be at the First Mennonite Church in Denver this evening. On Thursday, they're going to be at the Unitarian Church in Fort Collins. And on Friday, March 13th, they're going to participate in the Salon Duct Tape event at the Fort Collins Cafe. That's on Maple Street, and that's from 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday evening. And if you appreciate hearing voices like this, voices that really do challenge what's happening, the status quo and the narrative created by those in power, well, we would love to hear from you this morning with a contribution at 303-449-4885. Join Brendan from Westminster calling in this morning to donate. He says, thank you for KGNU. Well, we appreciate your support for KGNU's programming today. 303-449-4885 is the number to call. Well, we'll continue now with our coverage of the coronavirus and different communities that are being significantly impacted. Jason Flores-Williams is a civil rights attorney based in Denver. He also has an office in Mexico City, and he's involved in cross-border civil rights litigation. And he says that we're seeing a militarization, an increase in militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border, with the Trump administration using the coronavirus as an excuse to further degrade the rights of asylum seekers at the border.
The Trump administration, now ostensibly in response to several recent court rulings, but ostensibly, that being the key term, has sent troops to the border and now has changed the nature of why those troops are sent to the border and saying that they are there for coronavirus. So ultimately what all this ends up being, the real concern here is that for no scientific reasons whatsoever, that the Trump administration is using the coronavirus as an opportunity, in defiance of several court rulings, to engage troops at the border to further its own agenda.
Now, it seems that the border is already heavily militarized, I think probably more than most people would actually realize. And in the past few days, I think more than 160 active duty troops now have now been deployed onto the border. Give people a sense of what the border is like right now in terms of the militarization.
I spent a lot of time in my life actually studying the Holocaust. And while no one ever does themselves any favors in comparison to that, what I can say is it's a human nightmare of epic proportions, with people who are coming to the border in search of some degree of safety. Now, just think about this for a second. Why would anybody flee thousands of miles to come to a country, this being our country, that is going to treat them as far as, well, obviously horrifically, and with a lot of racist tendencies, but nonetheless sacrifice themselves to make this incredibly brutalizing and difficult trip to the United States border. And so they do this, and what happens to the United States border is that they are momentarily kept. And this is something that we have come to believe, is they are kept because it ends up being a profit for a lot of the private corrections companies who are actually profiting and benefiting from the suffering at the border. And then once that profit is derived from these horrifically helpless and voiceless people, then they are deported back into Mexico, where they simply become the fodder and are preyed upon from gangs and raped and very frequently killed. So with regard to the Trump administration's policy at the border, essentially what it is, it's one of profiting off the massive suffering and the hopes of people who are just absolutely voiceless, and then once having achieved that profit, kicking them back out into a land where we know, based on statistics, they will be violated, raped, and sometimes killed.
Well, we know that last week Trump mentioned the possibility of actually closing the U.S. border with Mexico in the context of the coronavirus. And as you said, you know, this is just in the historical context of an increase in militarized forces actually at the border. What does that mean for the people who are seeking refuge, who are fleeing violence in Central America? They're already dealing with a broken migration system. How is this making things worse?
Well, it makes things worse. Well, first off, let's reveal the fact that isn't it just convenient that Trump hasn't attempted to close the Canadian border? It's everything is the focus on Mexico. So we can assume, and just we know, that the coronavirus is already being utilized by this administration to further dehumanize people and to further their, what we consider to be racist objectives at the border with regard to the Mexican people and people who are suffering in America Latina and Mexico. Now, the problem with the fact that they're already facing deportation and the struggles that they already are is now this added category of, not only are we determining you to be illegal, but you are not only illegal, but now you are a biohazard. And this is something that as we're moving in, as I guess we're emerging or evolving or devolving as we go in this world right now, what does it exactly mean, this new category that may be applied to a lot of different people and a lot of different nationalities and identities going forward, is not only are you illegal, but now we consider you to be a biohazard. And then an administration identifying individuals and nationalities as that biohazard, then what is that administration going to do pursuant to that? It almost reminds me of Guantanamo, where out of nowhere, suddenly we had this thing called an enemy combatant who we could deny all civil rights to. So it's so at the beginning of this, at the beginning of this process of identifying this new category, I think it's instructive to look at it and say, what are the civil liberties concerns here and the human dignity concerns in identifying this new category of persons before we just strip them of all rights and just consign them to further suffering and worse.
Jason Flores-Williams, a Denver-based civil rights attorney who's also working in Mexico, who has observed what's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border. Just last week, an additional 160 troops were sent there under the auspices of prevention of the coronavirus from traveling, albeit little to no reported cases at the U.S. border. Jason Flores-Williams there joining us yesterday right here on Community Radio KGNU. Alan Watts. He comes your way every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. This Tuesday, tune in for a never-before-heard Alan Watts musical show.
A person who thinks all the time has nothing to think about except thoughts.
The wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, so set to music, with some very, very special and unique thank you gifts never before offered on KGNU for listeners who support the station during the show. That's a very special Alan Watts Spring Fund Drive show, Tuesday at 9, here on KGNU. And that's coming up at 9 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU, and it is time right now for the comment line.
Yes, hi. This is James, and I'd like to give an appreciation for Don DeBar's program, CPR News, that's Community Progressive Radio, who is true to KGNU's mission of airing underrepresented voices. It's dedicated, independent, excellent journalism. For example, the other day, he had on Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report, who had this to say: we'd hoped that Black America would return to its historical consensus in favor of social justice and peace, and we are still confident that that consensus remains largely intact among the masses of Black Americans. However, Ford continues, the Democrats, who are now the most aggressive of the war parties, have succeeded in linking Donald Trump to Russia and then lumping all critics of U.S. war-making with Russia and thereby with Trump. That is the evil genius of Russiagate, Ford says, a CIA-concocted lie designed to maintain the momentum of Obama's military offensive around the planet, to maintain that offensive without Obama. I'd suggest moving the CPR news to prime time, as that's the kind of material general listeners need to hear, as opposed to the corporate narrative of the BBC and others that it criticizes. Thanks. This is James Duncan.
Hi, this is Evan Ravitz. I've really been enjoying the music specials, especially Uncle Jeff's special on Sandy Denick. Thanks to KGNU for being the only media to cover in any depth Boulder's forthcoming world's first online petition system for initiatives and referenda, which has been in our city charter since voters approved it overwhelmingly in 2018. The March 4th Morning Magazine story quotes the city attorney saying that the free online petition system offered by renowned national nonprofit MapLight was rejected because the for-profit company that was selected for $250,000 had more election experience. That's totally different from what the city's technology director, Julia Richmond, told our city elections working group and council members Rachel Friend and Adam Swetlick on December 18th. Julia claimed MapLight had no experience making secure websites, and their proposed system had no security. These claims are false and easily disproved. MapLight has made secure websites for the League of Women Voters and the California Secretary of State, among others, and gets rave reviews for them. As of January 22nd, Julia Richmond no longer works for the city. Apparently, her lying was too blatant even for the city of Boulder. You can see the whole story, including audio recordings of Julia lying and proof that MapLight has made secure websites at this webpage, tinyurl.com/petitionstory. That's tinyurl.com/petitionstory. As Noam Chomsky says, there's nothing the ruling class hates more than democracy. That applies double to direct democracy, which gave Boulder the country's first voter-approved open space and the country's first gay rights laws, among other things we take for granted. Is that why city council allowing staff to tear apart this advance in democracy that voters put in the city charter by 71% to 29% in 2018? This is Evan Ravitz.
And that is the comment line.